The political pressure on New York's Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo is growing. A new report shows his administration concealed the number of COVID-19 deaths in nursing homes, and he's facing three accusations of sexual harassment and misconduct. This week, New York Attorney General Letitia James opened an independent investigation into those allegations. Cuomo has rejected calls for his resignation, though we've seen many powerful men lose their jobs during the Me Too movement, which has changed the way we think about power and accountability for sexual harassment and bad behavior. Let's look at how that shift is shaping the response to the allegations against Cuomo. We're joined on Skype by Jill Filipovich, who writes about politics, women's rights, and the law. Jill, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you, and I'm wondering how you see the Cuomo episode playing out in the context of the Me Too movement.
I think the most important thing we're seeing about how the Cuomo story is playing out is this investigation headed up by Letitia James. I think one thing that especially Democratic voters seemed quite frustrated by when Al Franken was pushed out of the Senate, I personally think rightly, was the lack of a fair process. And I think as the Me Too movement gets more sophisticated and grows, and as we see it take kind of clearer shape, it is really important to have fair, consistent processes so that we can really get to the root of how these harassment allegations came about, whether they're true, and what's the whole system behind them. I think what we've seen is that this is almost never a case of a single man behaving badly. It's often a whole system that enables for him and covers up for him. And the importance of an investigation is to really tell that whole story and show us the whole ecosystem.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the whole system because, as you mentioned, Letitia James heading up this investigation, she, of course, replaced Eric Schneiderman, who himself was accused of sexual abuse in his personal life and resigned from his position as attorney general in 2018. So imagine if he were still in office and in charge of overseeing this investigation of the governor. I mean, would people have any faith in that process?
Well, that's such an important point. And I think one of the arguments in favor of a robust and continuing Me Too movement is exactly this, that when we have men in charge of our most important institutions, whether those are political, legal, or cultural, and those same men are engaging in sexual harassment or even worse, sexual assault, that shapes whether or not we hold other men accountable. It shapes the kind of stories that we tell and that we hear about women, about power, about sex, about work. And so that part of the importance of Me Too is not just to look at sexual harassment and sexual assault as these kind of individual bad acts, but to look at them in the whole context of our society and our culture, and to look at them as violations of power, not just as sexual acts.
So that theme of power was a real focus of an appearance last night by Charlotte Bennett, one of the governor's accusers. She was on the CBS Evening News with Nora O'Donnell, and she described a conversation that she had with Cuomo in his office about intimate relationships. And she says that he told her he was open to dating anyone over 22. The governor is 63, by the way. Bennett also says Cuomo told her that he wanted a girlfriend and was lonely. Let's listen to part of that interview.
I feel like people put the onus on the woman to shut that conversation down. And by answering, I was somehow engaging in that or enabling it, when in fact, I was just terrified.
So Jill, Charlotte Bennett says she was deeply uncomfortable in that conversation, but she didn't feel like she could stop it or leave it because Cuomo is her boss. I mean, he is a very powerful person. So expand on this idea of power imbalances in these sexual harassment situations.
This is really what's at the heart of so many sexual harassment claims. In Charlotte Bennett's case, you know, she is not in a position to be able to shut that conversation down, even if she wants to, because the person who is pushing her into that conversation is in charge of whether or not she moves up the ladder in that workplace. So she's stuck in this position where, by even having a highly sexualized conversation, she's already being treated differently. She knows right in that moment that she's not being evaluated on the same terms as her male colleagues. And then on the other hand, if she pushes back on that, right, she knows that she could see some penalties from her boss. It may be along the lines of now her boss thinks that she's, you know, not a team player. She has a bad attitude. She can't take a joke. And when we hear Cuomo responding to these allegations, I mean, that's kind of what he's poking at, right? He's saying that he was just joking. He's just kind of a laid back, you know, laughy guy in the office. So it's not just about the harassment. It's about how it impacts your ability to move up the ranks in your workplace, your ability to do your job, and your ability and the ability of women generally to be evaluated for their competence and their work product rather than, you know, their sexuality and, frankly, their tolerance for sexualized and inappropriate jokes.
You know, one of the things that has come out of the Me Too movement in recent years is there are tighter policies in place in a lot of different workplaces. And in the governor's office, there are rules against sexual harassment. The governor says he supports them. And yet it appears that they don't always stop harassment from happening or even cause it to be investigated or addressed right away. So how effective are these workplace policies, Jill? I mean, do they have enough teeth?
You know, it's incredibly hard to evaluate how effective these workplace policies are. I think what we do know is that it's really important to have policies that are clear, that everyone understands, that are enforced consistently and fairly. You know, it's easy to say, don't sexually harass people, right? I think most employees would agree that that's like a pretty good and fair rule. But it needs to be explicit what that means. It needs to be explicit what happens if there is a complaint made. There need to be really clear reporting processes. And all of this needs to be quite transparent. So, you know, on both sides, someone who's filing a complaint about sexual harassment needs to understand on the front end, who knows that they're filing? Who's entitled to that information? What does an investigation look like? What are the potential penalties? And same for a person who has a complaint filed against them. And I think, unfortunately, in a lot of workplaces, you know, a lot of it is kind of ad hoc and whatever an HR department decides to do and is often done in the favor of protecting a company, not necessarily protecting and advocating for employees who have been sexually harassed. So I do think there's still a lot of work to be done, and it's not all going to happen just through sexual harassment training videos. A lot of this does need to be focused on what does an investigation look like? What are the processes involved?
Well, and just to widen the lens from Cuomo for a moment, I mean, this week we also saw an inspector general's report that found Ronny Jackson sexually harassed women when he was the top White House doctor. Louisiana State University released a report that found football coach Les Miles had inappropriate interactions with female students. I mean, these behaviors were known years ago, and yet since then, Jackson has been elected to Congress, and Miles has gotten a new job at the University of Kansas. So, Jill, where do things stand when it comes to accountability?
We're not there yet. Sexual harassment, sexism generally, is unfortunately incredibly pervasive. And I think, unfortunately, we're seeing kind of a widening partisan gap here on this issue. Men across the political spectrum, and some women too, right, can and do engage in sexual harassment. So sexual harassment itself is not a partisan issue, but the response to sexual harassment and to sexism generally does seem to be taking on a bit of a partisan flavor. Democrats certainly are very, very far from perfect. But unfortunately, with Republicans, sexual harassment and even allegations of sexual assault don't seem to be disqualifying in any way. And I think part of, you know, their strategy has been to really hit Democrats on sexual harassment, but then refuse to hold their own team accountable, which now I think is fueling this reaction from Democrats, you know, of some, not all, but some folks who I would say are a bit more cynical, saying, well, you know, if they're just going to use this against us, why are we falling for this trap? Why are we doing it? You know, and I would say that it's crucial to root out sexual harassment and assault wherever it happens, even if it's from someone, you know, on your quote unquote team. But it is frustrating to see that this has taken on a quite cynical and quite partisan flavor to it.
Well, as you mentioned, some of the Democrats who came out so strongly against Al Franken a few years ago are more measured in their response to Andrew Cuomo now, perhaps because they saw Republicans not holding their team to the same standard, and now Democrats don't want to unilaterally disarm. That's Jill Filipovich. She writes about politics, women's rights, and the law. Jill, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.